Universe seems to follow some traffic rules. That's no matter can travel faster than a speed of light. Let's find out why. Hi, this is your host Neeraj Gupta and you're listening to Science Up. Today we are here joined with a guest here, Dr. Sandeep Chatterjee, who is an assistant professor in the Department of Physical Sciences, ISER Berhampur. His work primarily focuses on phenomenology of relativistic heavy ion collisions and understanding the collective behavior of the matter produced in collisions. Hello sir, welcome to the show.
Hi Neeraj, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. We are also here joined with one of my colleagues here who is in physics. He's Vaibhav Srivastav from 137 Inverse. He's one of the members there. So welcome Vaibhav to the show.
Yeah, hello. Good morning, everyone.
So before moving to the main topic, why can't we travel at the speed of light? Let's talk about some measurements, like what is speed and how can we measure that? Sir, would you like to answer this?
Yeah. So when we talk of speed, two things come invariably, right?
Yeah.
That is distance
and time.
And time.
Yeah.
So these are concepts which we need to delve deeper. And so to do that, the first step is to understand a coordinate system, right? Both distance and time, they are measured in a coordinate system by an observer, right? So a coordinate system is nothing but coordinates that the observer sets up. Right. So the observer's eye is basically the origin of the coordinate system you can think of. And then the three axes that are stuck on the observer's eye, those are the coordinate system with respect to which the observer can measure whatever coordinate he or she wants. Right.
Yeah.
So before Einstein, we just had points in space, and those points just needed three coordinates to know where that point exactly is,
yeah,
with respect to the observer's eye.
Yeah, like our location, right? Like GPS location, or
yeah,
in a room, if there is any object kept there, it will be in some,
yeah,
coordinate system like that. It will be in space. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but in this case, since we, let's say we define distance with respect to some coordinate system, so that is just dependent on where my origin is.
Mm.
And at the same time, I also need to measure time somehow. So how do,
yeah,
these two measurements differ then? How is distance measurement different from the measurement of time?
Yeah, so the time that we are talking about, where you are just having three coordinates, the time is an absolute quantity, right? Every observer measures the same time.
Yeah.
So time does not transform between two observers. However, the other spatial coordinates, they transform under the two observer, right? Okay?
All right, yeah.
So what happens now, of course, the coordinates are transforming, but does that mean that everything transforms? Everything doesn't transform. For example, certain things remain invariant under transformation, and that one of them is the distance, right? If you have a point which is point A and point B, then the distance between them is given by xa minus xb whole square plus ya minus yb whole square plus za minus zb whole square and square root, right? Now, this,
yeah,
is a quantity which is constructed in such a way that if you now apply translation or rotation, this quantity does not transform, right? I mean, it remains what it is. It is invariant under translation as well as rotation. Now,
so this is given that we are in a Euclidean space and we are working with that, right?
Right. Since we are working in a Euclidean space, scalar product is defined in such a way that it keeps this distance invariant, right? So then,
yeah,
when Einstein comes in, he wants to put in time also as a address point. So the points which earlier was referred to now are being referred to as events in space-time. Okay,
so before there were just three dimensions,
yeah,
now he introduced another time as fourth dimension,
right? So now we have to visualize a four-dimensional space-time. Otherwise, earlier it was a three-dimensional space and time was like an absolute quantity. But now, because time also transforms between observers, so what we have to visualize is a four-dimensional space-time. And instead of points in space, we have to talk of events in space-time. So x, y, z, t, x, y, z, t.
So now the next should have something that will couple the other coordinates to time, because
right. So the immediate question is, this four-dimensional space-time, what quantity does it keep invariant under transformation from one observer to another observer? So of course you can talk of translation and rotation, but there is one more kind of transformation which you can also talk of, is transformation between inertial observers, right? Observers who are moving with respect to a constant velocity amongst each other.
So what exactly is the transformation between two inertial observers? Are you saying that from one frame and another frame, which are moving at a constant speed, which are moving at a difference of constant speed, the equations of motion would remain the same? Is that what you are referring to?
So that is the idea of relativity, that the physical laws remain invariant under coordinate transformation, right? Remain invariant amongst different observers. Now, what type of observers are included? Only inertial observers are included.
Okay.
Now, this is not a God-given thing or something. This is just one of the sweet desire of a physicist, right? To write physical laws should be such that they remain invariant under inertial observers.
Okay, so you were talking about merging time and space after Einstein came and all. So there's one fancy term that I heard, Minkowski distance. What's that?
Yeah, so I am coming to that. We were talking about invariance. So distance is invariant in this three coordinate system.
Yeah.
Now, when you attach time, so similarly, one could ask the question that between these inertial observers, now what is the quantity that remains invariant? Okay. Now there, what Einstein finally came up, the basic postulate is that the speed of light is constant, as well as that the speed of light is the maximum that you can achieve between any frames, right? So then with those assumptions, one can do the maths and one sees that one comes up with a distance which is called the Minkowski distance, and that gives us the idea also of this space-time.
So this happens to be a postulate which to a layman or to someone who's just introduced to relativity, the postulate comes out of nowhere. And the whole theory of relativity builds on that. So, were there actually a need? Was there a need of special theory of relativity? Why particularly was it needed? Or are there experiments that prove that the special theory is correct or something?
If any special theory of relativity, usually the textbooks, they will start with a lot of experiments that were at odds with the expectations in the turn of the 20th century. Okay, people went to the extent of postulating what is known as ether medium to explain some of the observables. But then there were even cleverer experimentalists who came up with nice experiments to show that if ether was present, expectation would be something. But the experimental results were pointing to the fact that ether was absent. Yeah. So, and precisely Einstein's postulates came at that point, and with that simple postulate, he had this new theory which could explain all the experimental observation at that point.
Okay.
And hence it got widespread acceptance, right? Of course, there have been a lot of experiments and experimental proofs that have in the earth, also in the outer space, since then, for the last 100 years, that have been going on.
Saying that since now we have relativity and the satellites and all that we have, they move at quite a high speed. So their trajectories and all, do we use relativity to calculate them, or are Newtonian equations good enough?
Yeah. For example, GPS, which Neeraj mentioned, and also rocket trajectories, which are regularly being launched, as you mentioned, they are all being done with the laws of Einstein rather than Newton, because they would miss by a minute or a degree. And over such long distances, if you miss the angle by a minute or a degree, it can result in catastrophe. Yeah.
Say the special theory of relativity in simple words, like Watson said, speed of light within a vacuum is the same, no matter the speed at which an observer travels.
That's right.
Also, he proposed like time is not constant, as it was supposed to be pre-Einstein era, that we can say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we are talking about speed and all. So we are talking about why can't we travel at the speed of light. So what do you think, sir, like what is the maximum speed that is achieved by humans?
Well, we have achieved, of course, not humans traveling at that speed, but it is subatomic particles that can travel, that can be accelerated to almost 0.9999 the speed of light. For example, at CERN.
Wow.
Where you have the Large Hadron Collider, where protons and lead nuclei are being accelerated, okay, in opposite directions, and then before they are made to collide, because we want to find out the matter that is created out of this collision. So there, these protons and leads, they are accelerated to almost the speed of light, but not the speed of light. That is also very important, particularly this, as this topic is saying, why can't we travel at the speed of light? So, so 0.999 the speed of light, and we hope to add more nines in future.
So, I mean, this is where a natural question would arise, that we can go up to 0.999. So, just a difference of 0.001. Why is it so important? Why is that not attainable?
Yeah, so we didn't touch upon the equations of special theory of relativity, the transformation equations. Everything is hidden in that. All the answers are there. So they are actually no more linear, right? They are non-linear.
Yeah.
So when we say non-linear, a gap of 0.1, okay, between 1 to 1.1, it can be something. But the same gap between 300 and 300.1, it can be completely of different magnitude because it is non-linear. If you assume linear theory, y of x is linear, then if x varies from 1 to 1.1, y also varies by 0.1. And if x varies from 300 to 300.1, then y also varies by 0.1. But if y on x is nonlinear function, then when x varies between 1 to 1.1, y can be something. But if x is varying between 300 and 300.1, it can be very different. So between 0.99c and c, although it seems like the speed difference is only 0.001c, the time transformation when you do, or the spatial transformation when you do, because these are nonlinear equations in the velocity, they change by a lot.
Okay, so the 0.99c that is achieved in LHC, can you tell us like a little bit like how they achieve this speed? Because that's really impressive, right? Yeah. Like achieving that much speed or something is...
Well, it's a technological wonder. I think there are actually collider engineering that is based on collider science, and they should be able to throw more light. What I can say from my limited knowledge is that these tunnels, they have magnetic fields and they have electric fields, okay? So there are electromagnetic fields that are there in these tunnels. And these things, these particles that are going round and are being accelerated, they are actually charged, right? For example, the proton or the lead ion, right? The electrons have been shed from the lead atom, and what lies only is the lead atom, lead nucleus, which is about 204 times charge of the electron, positively charged. So they are charged particles. So charged particles experience force under electromagnetic fields. And hence, you can expect that they will be accelerated if electromagnetic fields in certain way is applied on them.
Okay, so yeah, that's really nice. Okay, so according to Newton's first law, object in motion will stay in motion. And object in rest will stay at rest unless acted upon by outside force. So as we are talking about speed here, if there is external force applied on the object to increase its speed or something, there will be more energy required, right? So if we want more speed, we need more energy. Yeah. That brings us to main question. If you would like to address why can't we travel at the speed of light, like what's...
If you do the relativistic kinematics, we realize that even the mass of a particle, okay, is not the same with respect to any observer, okay? So, of course, still we can talk of a special mass, which is the rest mass, and that mass is the mass of the particle observed by an observer who is at rest with the particle, okay? So, it is the rest mass. Usually, when we talk of mass, we talk of the rest mass. And just like time is absolute, mass of the particle is also absolute in our pre-Einstein notion of space. Okay? But as soon as we are putting in this space coordinate, this time coordinate, and the space becomes Minkowski, the kinematics can be solved and it can be shown that even mass now actually depends on the observer. So the rest mass is only its mass with respect to observer who is at rest with the particle, but to another observer who is moving with some velocity with respect to this observer, the mass of the particle has actually changed. And again, there is a nonlinear dependence on this relative velocity. Okay. And it is, and the dependency is such that as the velocity is going closer and closer to the speed of light, this mass is non-linearly increasing and increasing, okay? So much so that the maths shows that if you put the velocity to speed of light, then this mass is like infinity.
So yeah, if no matter can actually travel at speed of light at c, so how light itself can travel?
That's also a good question. Photons, right? So what I what I said was part of the answer, and the other part lies in the question that you asked. The nonlinear function, if I look at it more carefully, it is like if I say the rest mass is m0, so then it is m0 times a nonlinear function on velocity. And the function is such that as velocity is going closer and closer to the speed of light, this function is becoming larger and larger nonlinearly. And so that at speed of light, this is becoming infinity. But there is a big but here. But with the assumption that this m0 is non-zero, right? Because there is a product, m0 times this function. If this m0 is 0, which is the case for light, okay, light means photons, and photons are massless particles, okay. Something is massless in one frame, then it remains massless in all frames, because...
So then this can be true for any particle that is massless.
Yeah, it is true for all particles. Particles that do not. It is true for all particles which are massless, right? That if it is massless, it will remain massless always, and it will always travel at the speed of light.
So the only thing that restricts us from reaching the speed of light is that we possess some mass.
Yes, yes, yes. So better, so you eat less.
I need to go to gym. What about like speed of light changes in any circumstance? Like if we change the medium, if light cannot travel much deep into the ocean, does the speed of light changes?
So far, remains constant at we were talking of clean space-time environment. Okay. The space-time is devoid of any other fields or any other ingredient. But when you can think of space-time, say inside an ocean, or inside a magnetic field or whatever. So there, of course, the space-time is not devoid of nothing. It is actually filled up with some fields or some particles or whatever, right? So in that case, those fields will backfire. Suppose the electromagnetic field is traveling. Now, light is an electromagnetic wave. It travels with the speed of light, which is c, but that c is the speed in vacuum when the space-time is devoid of nothing, okay, it has nothing. But if the space-time is filled up with some other material, then that material, as the electromagnetic wave passes, it perturbs that material because it is also made up of charged particles. And then because of that interaction, the material itself tries to cause resistance or other kinds of interactions or forces on the electromagnetic wave itself. And hence, the speed of light can change depending on the medium in which it is traveling. However, so what we said is still right, that it is same with respect to all observers.
Yeah.
That it is same, only that value has changed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, depending on the epsilon and the permittivity and the permeability of the medium, epsilon and mu.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, the refractive index.
Right, right. That's how the concept of refractive index comes up. Microscopically, there is interaction going on with the medium particles.
So,
answering the whys of the question that we had, one reason that you gave is as we try to reach the speed of light, as we increase our speed of any particle, its mass is supposed to increase, right? That's one of the reasons. What are the other reasons we require infinite energy, right?
Well, so that I would say as a consequence of infinite mass only. Yeah. So if there is...
Yeah, they are again coupled by Einstein's equation.
Yeah, if as the mass is increasing, so even a change by delta V velocity would require a certain change in energy delta E, and that because of nonlinear dependence, the delta E will be much larger when the velocity is closer to the speed of light than when ordinary velocities we are talking of. There, whatever energy you need to change the velocity by certain amount, because the mass changes by a certain amount, but at a higher velocity, because the mass changes by a lot different amount, the energy needed also changes by a lot higher. Yeah.
Okay. So, as the velocity reaches to c, speed of light, they did some time dilation, right? So, would you like to?
So, I mean, not only at the speed of light. So, it is the consequence of the coordinate system that we choose, that we find that as you go from one observer to another observer, I told you the Minkowski distance remains invariant. That is the usual distance minus the time distance square, right? But then your question is, what happens to the usual distance? So just the usual distance doesn't stay invariant any longer, okay? You can do the maths and you can show that the invariant under transformation from one observer to another observer using Einstein's laws of transformation, the usual distance actually contracts. So we have the concept of length contraction. But we showed that the Minkowski distance actually stays invariant, right? So something has to compensate it. And so the other one is the minus time difference square. So the time difference actually grows. That's why we call it, we have the concept of time dilation. So length contraction and time dilation goes hand in hand to keep the Minkowski distance constant, but not the usual distance. The usual distance will contract. Now as this velocity is closer and closer to the speed of light, the dilation in time that is happening, that becomes larger and larger. Again, there is a nonlinear dependency. It's not linear. So the larger dilation happens for, change in velocity when the absolute velocity is actually much larger, closer to the speed of light.
Yeah.
So here I would like to add one point here. Sir, do you watch superhero movies or something?
Are you superhero? Yeah, very much.
Like, do you know? Yeah. Do you know Flash? Do you know Flash?
Flash? I think I don't know. No, I don't remember.
Okay. So Bhavan, you know, right?
Can move.
Yeah. So actually, he can. Yeah, he actually can move faster than speed of light. Or according to that.
Okay.
So in a recent movie, Justice League. Actually, I would like to merge two points here. Like, he can actually travel faster than the speed of light, and he can actually backward time travel. So he, like, in one scene, he was moving at the speed of light, and he actually could travel into the past.
Okay.
So I would like to ask you, like, is time travel possible?
So, as strictly speaking, as per the laws of physics, so far, or as per Einstein's special theory of relativity, it is possible, right? I mean, there is nothing that stops from, only thing is what it says, that to do that, you need signal which travels greater than the speed of light. Now you go around and find out a signal which will travel greater than the speed of light. it will break the causality rule. The effect will predate the cause. So all these are possible. I mean, to strictly, if you look at equation, it is possible from the maths.
In theory, it is.
Yeah. And hence that there is so much excitation. It's not for nothing, right?
Yeah.
Because as soon as we put, so all these are consequence of putting time as a coordinate. As soon as you put time as a coordinate system, you can think, oh, I can go back, I can go front, I mean forward, right? Just like any other coordinates.
Just like moving in space, yeah.
Yeah, so thank you, sir, so much for joining the conversation here. We learned a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Neeraj and Vaibhav, for this conversation.
Thank you.
I too learned a lot while as we talked and hearing the questions. And it is always a great excitement to talk to young minds like you all. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.